and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Pasir Salat MP Datuk Seri Tajuddin Abdul Rahman has been appointed Malaysia's ambassador to Indonesia, replacing Zainal Abidin Bakar, who retired in April last year. Now, the appointment has drawn criticism from many, those who question Tajuddin's suitability for the appointment. Now, someone who has spoken out against the appointment is Datuk Nor Farida Arifin. She's a member of G25, and from the year 2000 to 2008, she served as the ambassador of Malaysia to the Netherlands. Datuk Farida, thank you for joining us today. Now, I'm just going to quote what Tajuddin Rahman has said. He says he's been unfairly criticized over this appointment, and he says that he has in fact served the government, country and people for more than 45 years. I'm wondering if you think that I'm wondering what you think should be the yardstick to measure the suitability of an ambassador.
Well, first of all, an ambassador is expected to conduct himself with propriety and decorum. And I don't think, well, from his record so far as a member of parliament and his behavior, his conduct in Dewan Rakyat, his suitability is really questionable. If you recall, he was involved in a fracas with MP Khalid Samad, where he and his son attacked Khalid Samad in the grounds of parliament because Khalid had criticized him for calling DAP MP, was it Teresa Kok, as the only Kok in the house, which is totally distasteful. And because of that, he attacked MP Khalid Samad. And if you recall, the last year there was this LRT train crash where 43 people were seriously injured. And he, as the Prasarana chairman, made fun of it and insensitively called the thing as train kiss kiss. And when a foreign journalist questioned him and he told the foreign journalist, jangan probo.
Okay, so that's he does have a reputation, I mean, that's publicly known. But when he goes to Indonesia, is it possible that he can still represent the country, represent the government of the day, and its particular interests on bilateral issues? Isn't that still possible?
Well, there have been instances before where ambassadors have been politically appointed and not career diplomats. But the ambassadors who had been appointed ambassadors before, the MPs that were appointed ambassadors before, did conduct, was suitable for the post, like Jamaluddin, the Arwah Jamaluddin judges, and also Tan Sri Bernard Dompok, who was our ambassador to the Holy See in the Vatican. I'm not sure whether Dato' Sri Tajuddin is capable of conducting himself in a manner which we expect of an ambassador. To me, it's an insult, and there's been a public outcry about his appointment. To me, it's an insult to the people of Indonesia, to the government of Indonesia, to appoint a person of this such low caliber to be an ambassador, to represent our country.
Well, can I ask you then, Datuk Farida, what makes for a good diplomat? What makes a good ambassador?
Well, career diplomats are trained, are groomed for the job. You know, when they join the civil service, the PTD we call it, which is also the civil service and diplomatic service, they go for a 1-year training in Intan and another 6 months in IDFR, which is our Institute for Diplomacy and Foreign Relations. And you have to know what foreign relations, how to conduct foreign relations. You must know at least you are trained in the provisions of the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations. So you know the what is expected of the sending country and the receiving country. I mean the host country and the sending country. And I don't know whether Tajuddin has had such training. Is to me, I don't think he has. So, you know, even if I don't think for such an important post as Indonesia, the government, in my opinion, should send a career diplomat like the ambassador which you had before was recently retired.
Right.
Ambassador. Yeah.
That Farida, can I ask you what is the danger of having a diplomat or an ambassador who may not be good for the role? What are the trade-offs? What's the drawback?
he will not provoke a war between our two countries. We don't want another confrontation with Indonesia.
That's probably an extreme scenario, right? But the relationship between Malaysia and Indonesia is a very important one for the country, not just politically, but in terms of trade, especially as Indonesia, emerges as an economic power in the region. I do want to ask you, though, this. From somebody who's been inside the service, are there certain posts? And you mentioned Jamal Jarjus, who was the ambassador to the U.S., right? And,
yes.
Are there posts and countries, rather, that are of strategic importance, of greater strategic importance to Malaysia? And are those other missions that are less so? And which are the ones are more likely to have a political appointee because these are rewards for political loyalty? We know that happens everywhere in the world, and exception. So could you kind of map up the landscape for us? What are the most important missions globally?
For us, it's Indonesia, China, US, and the EU countries, in that order. And also the Arab countries. Those are the most important for us. But in fact, like when I was serving in the Netherlands, all the American ambassadors who were there with me, who would serve at the same time as me, were all political appointees. They were basically campaign donors, you know. They were basically billionaires and millionaires who had contributed to the campaign fund of the president, and they were rewarded for that. But having said that, they were suitable for the country. They were suitable to be appointed as ambassadors because they conducted themselves with propriety and decorum, as is expected of a diplomat.
Is there such a thing, Datuk Farida, as a outspoken diplomat, a plain speaking ambassador?
Well, now I can afford to be outspoken because I've retired. But when you are a serving diplomat, you're not supposed to be too outspoken, because you have to express yourself diplomatically and not offend anyone, especially members of the host country.
Dr. Farida, there has been criticism of the diplomatic service as a whole, or suggestions or observations that it's in decline, and that the decline in part has been exacerbated by either the politicization of the service and such. Do you agree with those critics? I mean, what would you identify as the areas of challenges for the diplomatic service of Malaysia?
Well, I don't think there's been a decline. Maybe there's been a decline in the command in the in English proficiency, but that is basically due to our education system. But at least with Maputo, the foreign ministry has tried to address this, because they organize weekly meetings, weekly classes for young diplomats, for our younger officers, to teach them how to speak, you know, in public forums and so on. Yeah, but the politicians are not helping, because if you recall, the Prime Minister's recent visit to the UAE, where as a result of him not having been met by the host at the airport, he recalled our ambassador and put him in cold storage. And our foreign minister did not even defend his own officer, which was quite shocking. Because I belong to a chat group of former ambassadors, the ambassador in question, our ambassador to UAE, had informed, because the UAE government had informed our ambassador that the dates suggested by our prime minister was not suitable to them, because those were the dates that they were also hosting the World Expo. And they were busy with this event. But our ambassador conveyed the message to the PMO, the Prime Minister's office. My question is, how come the officers of the Prime Minister's office did not inform him of this and advise and recommend to him not, you know, to choose another date, which was what was suggested by the UAE government? So when they arrived at the airport, only our ambassador and his staff was there to meet them, and they had to go through normal channels, they had to go through like any other, not as a visiting VIP. They had to go through normal channels, immigration, and so on, and that to and they had to queue up like other tourists.
Do you think, Dr. Farida, do you think that the public understands the role of the diplomatic service beyond just being, say, the welcome wagon or the receptionist team for official visits to a country? I mean, there's so much more that goes into the diplomatic service than just being a welcome team, right?
Of course. I mean, you must know, you must have your analytical ability, because you have to write reports both on trade and politics, you know, to send to Wisma Putra, to the headquarters. And if you do not, if you don't have those analytical skills and the ability, what kind of a diplomat are you going to make? That's my question.
Dr. Farida, can I also ask you to come back to what you said earlier about the more, I guess, the important countries for our diplomatic service? You mentioned Indonesia, US, China, and then you also mentioned the Middle East. And I'm wondering, when we think about political appointees, we also have those special envoys from the Prime Minister's office. You know, we think of the special envoy to the Middle East, special envoy to East Asia. Do they play the role of ambassador? Do they play the role that the diplomatic service plays?
They are supposed to. But if you remember, Dato Sri Haji Awang was appointed as our envoy to Middle East. But when our Prime Minister went to visit Saudi Arabia, the Saudi government made it clear that they did not want him to be part of the entourage. So, I'm sorry, but I think that's extremely funny. That says it all, doesn't it?
So what do you think is going on, Dato Farida? Is it that, you know, often, or in this instance, these are sinecures, basically rewards for work well done. You get, you know, an ex-IGB goes to Paris.
Yeah.
And so they can spend their retirement years in luxury, if they like, all on an extended holiday. Yeah. Is that the thinking going on among political circles when they think about diplomacy?
It seems to be so. It appears to be so, because it seems to be a reward. Well, as far as this government is concerned, this backdoor government, that is, you know, it seems to be, is the reason are all political reasons for the appointment of ambassadors lately. I mean, so the suitability of the person concerned.
Right. So then, should there be oversight over these appointments? Should there be more transparency when it comes to who gets appointed and who gets sent where?
Like, for example, in the US, every ambassador is appointed to any country will have to go through through a congressional committee. They will be questioned as to their suitability by the congressional committee. And it's the same in Indonesia. But here we don't do that. It's the prerogative basically of the foreign minister to choose who we want to go to where, to which country. But lately, the foreign minister seems to be playing second fiddle to the prime minister. The Prime Minister seems to be the one who's making all the decisions regarding ambassadorial posts.
Right. Dr. Farida, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. That was former Ambassador Dato' Noor Farida Arifin. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutin. We're discussing the recent appointment of Pasir Salah MP Datuk Sri Tajuddin Rahman to the role of Malaysia's ambassador to Indonesia. Joining us now is Iza Ibrahim. She's an analyst at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, better known by its acronym ISIS Malaysia. Iza, from a foreign policy perspective, how would you describe the bilateral relationship between Malaysia and Indonesia?
The relationship itself is quite an enduring one, actually. It's built on quite a considerable long history. It's about not inclusive of our 65 years of formal relationship. It's gone through some deep ties culturally, historically, and socially. But at the same time as well, we can't assume that these guys are always at its highs, high points. There's, of course, their low points. But despite all this, there are a few consistencies we can see across across these relations. The first is most common is our economic relations. It's been one of our strongest points, considering Malaysia is a trade-dependent country. So to ensure that we have such ties going on is absolutely vital. Our defense and security is also one of the big hallmarks of our relations. It's arguably, depending who you ask, is one of the strongest security relations in Southeast Asia. And it's built even better with the personal and informal ties amongst the armed forces personnel. And there are also the social element I've mentioned. There's something that we like to call the serumpun, what a lot of the Malaysians and the Indonesians love to say to show that there are quite a lot of connections between them. And this actually makes it really good for us, especially when it comes to emerging issues, even enduring ones, that this brings up a sort of natural collaboration between the two countries, especially in light of recent events such as Myanmar, Ukraine, and the major power competition going on between the US and China here.
We know, because the defense minister, Prabowo Subianto, was, went to school in Kuala Lumpur, and so you'd say underscoring those ties. But I want to ask you, in terms of this controversy surrounding the appointment and the suitability of this veteran UMNO politician for the role, do you think that people have misunderstood? I mean, they've taken perhaps Tajuddin's recent faux pas as a measure of the man, whereas the fact that he's a senior member of the ruling party, does that in fact make him a suitable candidate?
Suitability or not, I think one of the biggest points we should be seeing is through time we can see what happens. Because again, like, his appointment is very recent, so we can't exactly, like, I don't think Antas anyone has a crystal ball with them. I don't think anyone can say whether he will or will not do a good job. Yes, it is easy to look at his recent behaviors, especially nowadays with social media, a lot of things are easily published and displayed. But at the same time, I think at the end of the day, what we need to see down the line is whether he will get the job done. We're going to have to measure on his ability, because as an ambassador and all that, we need to be looking at whether he will be able to not only maintain and display to the Indonesians that he will not only strengthen ties, but also pursue our national interests as well. So I think if we are able to maintain that down the line, I think that would be a better indicator rather than whatever public outburst or public comments he may make.
Well, we spoke to Datuk Noor Farid Arifin a little bit earlier, former ambassador to the Netherlands, and she pointed out that, Indonesia is one of the most, if not the most, important countries when it comes to our diplomatic ties. And I wanted to ask you about that, about the expectations for someone like Tajuddin coming into a role in Indonesia. There are issues that are sensitive to both countries, and Tajuddin will have to negotiate that. What are the expectations or landmines that he will have to navigate in terms of issues that are sensitive to both our countries?
So, I think one of the biggest caveats at the moment is that, yes, there are quite a lot of hot-button issues, and especially they're kind of seasonal, if you want to think about it. Like, there's certain points in time where certain issues might come up, and then they'll kind of go away and come back, given a couple months, couple years. But at the moment, I feel like quite a lot of these issues are put on hold because of the fact that the pandemic has completely taken up the agenda of a lot of people, a lot of countries and respective governments. So at the moment, I guess it's a bit of a reprieve in a weird way of looking at things, that at the moment, whatever it is, their priority is to ensure that they have the ability to bounce back and at the same time ensure that they are reconnecting with the outside world to kickstart again their economy, especially these are the guys who depend on them the most. But there are still really that we will be facing again. I think one of them we all are facing is the issue with the migrant workers and foreign labor from Indonesia coming into Malaysia. Especially nowadays, with a lot of them returning to Indonesia during the pandemic, there is quite a very noticeable shortage of these people. And the Malaysian stakeholders have shown they are not exactly prepared to meet the sudden shortage. And so I feel like those are one of the issues that needs to be negotiated. And also next, and coming alongside that would be the issue with the domestic workers and that do come in as well. And these are one of the issues, especially because these are involving the human element, where where certain comments and everything can become inflammatory and or misinterpreted. So I think these are one, like, that should be taken into account, because we know there is...
Right. So if I could just, because we have a couple of minutes left, I was wondering, beyond issues of national interest and, you know, the very tricky issues around labor and such, is there a role for ambassadors to reimagine relationships? Is there a need for us to rethink? I mean, beyond the rather mawkish sentiments of, you know, Sarumpun and stuff, are there other modalities, are there any other kinds of visions you think that we can bring to our relationship with Indonesia?
Actually, I think there is, because a sort of trend that goes around in Southeast Asia is that our sort of diplomatic and foreign relations, like you can say our modus operandi or our characteristics of it, is very informal and is very personal based. So we don't necessarily do these big ceremonies, big announcements and all that. A lot of the stuff that gets done is actually one-on-one or very under the radar sort of thing. And that's where we get more of the traction. So, I mean, this is also even reflective in our ASEAN conferences and summits, that we don't make the big announcements on stage. In fact, a lot of the stuff that gets done is in the side meetings while that actually happens. So I feel like also with the type of personalities and everything, political appointees, no matter how you feel about them or the sort of connotations that come with them, they are often appointed by those who they, by the, their leaders, who they believe will get the job done. So who knows, there could be personal traits or sort of maybe some hidden X factors they may have that could bring something new to the table for them and that could give them space to work with.
All right, Izzah, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. We appreciate your time. Izzah Ibrahim, analyst at ISIS Malaysia, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.